This is Simon Shaheen. You are listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM.
The Catskill Town Board meets every first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall and holds a committee meeting the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGXC. Go to wgxc.org/listen or click on the listen button at wgxc.org to tune in to any of the Catskill Town Board meetings, the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at wgxc.org and townofcatskillny.gov.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years. Offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Al Margolis of Chester, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Daily News for Monday, May 22nd. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Ryan Whalen reports for the New York State of Politics that there are now more than 71,000 migrants currently in New York, with most in New York City. Governor Kathy Hochul says she has been working with New York City Mayor Eric Adams and the federal government to find housing options. Hochul said, quote, "We're working closely with them, literally hour by hour, trying to identify places where there are welcoming communities," unquote. Government officials in many upstate counties are now saying they have enough migrants already and can't take any more. Hochul countered, quote, "There's not a cost to the locality. This is simply allowing people to be welcome, whether it's in a hotel, if it's in a campus, and the money follows them. The money will cover the cost of all the services they will need. I think a lot of people don't know that yet. They assume they'll be borne by the local community. That's not the case here," unquote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. WNYT reports that Rensselaer County officials are warning about a spike in deadly overdoses in the county since May 19th. Cocaine and fentanyl is reported to be involved in the overdoses in Rensselaer County, the health department there said. Authorities are saying there may have been as many as 5 fatal overdoses this weekend in Rensselaer County. Anyone needing help should call the Rensselaer County Recovery Helpline at 1-833-467-3123 or email rensco.helpline@gmail.com. Read more about this story at WNYT.com. And the Troy Record reports that Brian Owens, the retired City of Troy police chief, now running for Rensselaer County Sheriff, has chosen Kerry Peter Marble as his Rensselaer County undersheriff. Peter Marble has a 26-year law enforcement career from the North Greenbush Police Department to the New York State Police. There are 2 Republicans and 2 conservative candidates running for sheriff in the June primary election. Kyle R. Bourgeau is running on both lines against Republican Jason C. Stockless and against conservative Brian G. Owens. Read more about this story in the Troy Record. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Monday, May 22nd. We are 38.9% of the way through the year with 30 days left until summer. Local early morning temperatures range from 42 degrees in the usual winter, Steventown, to 48 up in Tannersville. Heat does rise. Regional average soil temperature is 56 degrees. Pollen levels are up in high territory and should hang around there all week. Fog will be hanging out for some time this morning, especially in Columbia County. Winds start moving things around by 8 a.m., dispersing it. Conditions will be comfortable and we get a high of 74 at 4 p.m. Light rain chances will be around from 4 p.m. to midnight and we see a low temperature of 50 degrees before a dry, partly cloudy, and comfortable Tuesday with a high of 73. Overnight, we see a dip to 49 degrees. Then, Wednesday, a stormy afternoon with a high of 76. Thursday is looking dry but cooler with a high of 66. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 5:23 a.m., low at 12:23 a.m., and high again at 6:12 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 62 degrees and the tide strength will be average. Sunset today will be at 8 o'clock p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:24 a.m. Looking way up, we see plasma winds will be average at 556 kilometers per second with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. X-class flare chances are at 30%. With a G1 class magnetic storm watch, so expect some lame radio reception, dropped calls in rural areas, along with possible GPS glitches. Radio propagation conditions are currently horrible, with some bands closing randomly until dark, with fair chances below 4 MHz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 6, storm level. Watch for spikes up to and above 7, because that's how we get auroras. The current sunspot number is 140. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate. Come meet some of us on Thursday. We'll be hanging out at the Left Bank Ciders, slinging soup.
What else do DJs get? I mean, we're just voices in the air, but we're what makes radio live. And what do we get for it? Seems like every year you pack everything up, move to another town. Gets harder and harder to find a station that'll let you program music you want to play. You're 40 and there's some kid half your age who will take your job and do it for half the money. And then you find yourself making silly demands. Free coffee. But that's my little moment of honesty, so we can get back to the nonsense.
Thank you. So we are joined with
Jonathan Flicker
from the
Hudson. Oh, from the Rotary Club.
And we did a little bit of chatting before. We're not sure how much got lost in the translation of the radio waves with the things going on here. But what would you describe the Rotary Club as to somebody who's just hearing about it? Like if you were telling like a loved one or even just a stranger on the street.
So the Rotary Club is really dedicated to helping people through volunteer service. You know, I think the best way, we have a really strong mission statement. So I'm going to read that. We provide service to others, promote integrity, and advance world understanding, goodwill, and peace through our fellowship of business professional and community leaders. And I think that's really right. I mean, we see many groups of people, a lot of groups of people from outside that come to us for a number of volunteer opportunities. And you know, I love the Hudson Rotary Club. We are so engaged. The people are so into it. And we just are very keyed in on doing good and through volunteer services.
Huh. It's nice to hear businesses actually acting ethical, you know, with the time we're in. So, you know, I really appreciate that from the clubhouse to the Rotary Club and just from person to person, you know, that's an amazing thing to offer people services and help lift them up and just be a part of the community.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is that, you know, people, not politically, people really, everyone should be treated with respect. And, you know, some people get down on their luck and some situations are not, you know, not ideal. And so if you can help them, you should. I mean, that's always been, you know, I've been in business for more than 30 years, and I've always tried to focus on trying to help others with what I have. You know, I'm not a giant philanthropist. There are obviously people who do this with billions and billions of dollars. But, you know, my wife and I always try to do what we can to help. And we try to give both of ourselves as well as of you know, monetarily.
A quote we were talking a little bit before that I really like that you said is you would treat the janitor with as much as respect as the CEO.
Yeah, that is the cornerstone to my business ethics. I think it's really, really important for people to understand that everyone who is trying, just trying to do what they're doing is, you know, it's great. You know, and my comment is that the person emptying your garbage can in your office at the end of the day, there is absolutely 100% no reason to treat them any differently than you would treat anybody. And I really, you know, I have always said that. I've been the CEO of 6 or 7 companies at this point. I say it to my staffs, and it is the cornerstone really of integrity. You have to treat people well, and as you know, again, so if somebody's the king of a country, you know, you may have to bow to them or whatever the case is, but you should really, you know, I see people all the time and thank them for the job they're doing. The world works because people help and people do. And you can't ever forget that. And you can't ever forget that people deserve, you know, the best from, you know, from other people. So,
yeah, I really appreciate those values. It's just being able to respect everybody equally is super nice. It's a nice change of pace with all the generalization we do. Like we put people into groups kind of defaultly. Right. And it's just a nice way of breaking down those groups and saying, hey, we're all human. So, yeah.
I really believe that. And sometimes people fall into groups that they want to be in. Sometimes they fall into groups that they don't want to be in. It's just circumstantial. And so, you know, some people need help. Some other people can help them. So you should, again, give of yourself. And again, you know, just treating people with respect and the respect that they deserve, I think is really, really important. And the Rotary Club really gives that a platform, you know, to do that. We, you know, we've gone and hosted Christmas dinners, and, this week, tomorrow there is a big service day, and I'm sure we'll talk about that. But I mean, it's, you know, the Rotary is this very structured platform that really allows you to do that. And that's why from the first meeting I went to, I was just like, wow, this is just terrific.
And what was your like first experience with the Rotary Club?
Are we on?
Yeah.
So my neighbor, my neighbor was having dinner and he invited some folks over, and a lovely woman came with a friend of hers who made the best chocolate cake I've ever had in my life by far. And so she said to my neighbor and myself, she said, "You guys, are you interested in volunteer work?" And we both said yes. And she said, "I'm a member of the Rotary." And I was like, "Isn't the Rotary for a bunch of old men? And don't they just go there and drink?" And she was like, "No, that's not it at all. It's structured volunteerism." And she invited us to come, and we went. And right from the get-go, it was really, this is what we're doing to help this group of people. This is what we're going to do in a month to help that group of people. And everyone takes it really seriously. And we try to plan bigger events in the future, but really, if you think about it, every day people really need your help, and it calibrates your thinking of how, you know, again, all, you know, you got to treat everyone with respect, and the Rotary Club really, again, provides a platform to do that.
Yeah, I think we could both use more of those two things: kindness and chocolate cake. In this world,
this chocolate cake was unbelievable.
I mean, that's like what you got to live by, you know, just appreciating the things around you and helping other people too is just something about it just lifts you up too. It's hard to explain. And I really just, that's awesome that you're able to do that through the Rotary Club. And like, that's amazing. I think I was asking this before. I'm not sure if it got lost in the technical difficulties earlier, and if anybody's tuning in now, hello, welcome to Clubhouse Radio, broadcasting to you live on 90.7 FM WGXE. I'm interviewing a member of the Rotary Club, and he's telling us all about it, and it seems like an amazing place where you can go, and they focus on helping the community. And where is it located?
It depends. We have meetings that are social events, so we can really get to know each other well and network, and so that happens at restaurants, and it's always a blast. And then at the community college, we meet there. But we're gonna, I think we're finding a different location for that. So, but we really make it known. We post stuff, again, it's an incredibly worthwhile, structured area where we can discuss things. I have to tell you, we've discussed everything from building houses and supporting women's causes, which I strongly believe in, and mental health, which is another unfortunately and very sadly under-supported part of you know, the communities. And so we try to sort of, and it's not always about money. It's all, you know, sometimes it's about going in and really helping. And I think going in and seeing people and seeing the situation they're in is just, you know, it when you first do it, it sort of strikes you. But you go through it, and they're people, and they're lovely, and they just could be down on their luck, whatever the situation is.
Yeah. So the vibe I'm kind of getting is like almost what you were saying. They treat everybody equally, and like you were an outsider to them, and you came in and you just felt immediately welcomed, you'd say?
I think that's right. It's interesting. I'd never even looked at it that way, but I really think that's right. And I think that's probably what really hooked me right away with them, is that, you know, again, they really just treat everyone like, you know, like humans should treat other humans. You know, you shouldn't discriminate, you know, you shouldn't discriminate for any reason. And again, you know, sometimes people hook up with bad crews and so on and so forth. But, you know, fundamentally, you just have to create an environment for people to live. And, you know, it's and the Rotary Club really does that.
Right. I mean, if you compare the difference of ability, like the results of treating people kind versus not, it's just I mean, it just sounds so cheesy to say and put it like this, but it just affects everybody in such a way, almost like exponentially. Like if you be kind to somebody, they could be kind to three other people, and they could be kind to three other people, and then boom, that's nine people right there.
I really think that's right. And the world would be a better place if people just sort of respected the rights and what other people want to do. You know, by the way, I think crime is horrible. I think drugs are horrible. I think all of those things, you know, but
people, yeah, but what is judging and just saying, hey, don't do that?
I think that's exactly where I was going, is that, you know, you have to look at why somebody's doing something. Is it, you know, and these people need help. I mean, yeah. you know, and so you should think about it a little bit differently. Just open your mind a little bit and just say, you know, this person did this. Are they down on their luck? Is there a problem? Are they mad at somebody else? Did somebody else do something to them? Whatever the case is. So there's always, you know, there's always two ways to look, at least two ways to look at something. And I, you know, it's interesting. The Rotary Club really, they bring things in that are really just very interesting. They just brought in a woman's support system, and you know, I, with all the stuff that's going on in the world right now, and certainly with the Supreme Court and things like that, women are women. They're human beings. They should have, it feels like they're losing their rights. But I just, again, I don't want to get political, but I jump on whatever I can do to help.
If you are hungry or just want to help community radio, come on out on Thursday, May 25th to Left Bank Ciders in Catskill to their community soup night. WGXC is organizing this night, Thursday, May 25th, with a live on-site broadcast, DJs, and soup. Come on out for a bowl of soup, conversation, and some music. Each Thursday night, Left Bank Ciders hosts a community soup night where volunteers make soup with proceeds benefiting a local nonprofit. All proceeds go to Waveforms WGXC 90.7 FM. On Thursday, May 25th, the Left Bank Ciders in Catskill from 5 to 7 p.m.
My name is Annie Skabinski. I'm a Master Gardener volunteer and happy to be part of the Nature Calls podcast team. On today's episode of Patch to Plate, I'm talking about the spring thing we call asparagus. Other early arrivals to our veggie season make me happy. Ramps, fiddlehead ferns, rhubarb, and spinach. These all begin to show up in gardens where we forage, farm stores and stands, and sometimes, though rarely, at a pick-your-own location. I'd like to talk about each of those, but today I just find myself with a lot to say about asparagus. Have you seen it grown? A big field of asparagus looks like something lunar or otherworldly. It's a brown field that looks like somebody ran through and shot a quiver of pencils into the air and they all landed tips up. It's fun to pick asparagus in a field like that. You grab your bucket and you head out. You find some asparagus stalk that looks tasty. Just bend down, bend the stalk, and it'll snap off. Where it snaps will leave the tender vegetable in your hand and the woody stalk still on the ground. The thickness of the stalks you see and pick are going to vary, and they're not indicative of either the age or the tenderness. Thickness of asparagus you enjoy is really a personal preference. Us, we like the thin asparagus. That's our preference. But if it's thicker or thick, it's a good idea to peel it with a vegetable peeler. Good varieties to consider if you want to grow your own: Jersey Giant, Jersey King, Jersey Knight, notice a trend, Viking, KB3, Purple Passion. Check out the attributes of each of these varieties from a link on our Cornell Cooperative Extension page. Like most perennials, it takes a while to establish an asparagus bed, but once you do, it will be productive for years. Asparagus pairs extremely well with butter, cheese, lemon, olive oil, salt and pepper, and eggs. For cheese, particularly Parmesan and Pecorino are favorites, but feta, fontina, goat, Munster, ricotta, Romano all work really, really well. For lemon, both the juice and the zest flavor asparagus nicely. Keep in mind that asparagus likes to keep company with milk and cream and dill, mushrooms, parsley, shallots, and hearty stalks, vegetable or chicken stock, work well. Vinaigrettes and vinegars are a good pairing with asparagus. So with that in mind, let's get cooking. Thin asparagus cooks faster, thicker asparagus takes a little longer, If it's thin, like pencil thin or pinky thin, it'll cook really quickly no matter what method you use. If it's any thicker than my index finger, I tend to peel it. You can blanch it, steam it, you can grill it. If you grill it, I recommend you grill it on a screen so it doesn't fall through the grill slats. You can oven roast it and certainly stir fry it. One of my favorite ways to eat asparagus, and we have eaten it in dozens and dozens of ways, is also the simplest. I get a large cast iron skillet hot. I don't use any oil in the pan, I just get the pan hot. And while it's heating, I snap off the ends of asparagus, spray it with a little olive oil, sprinkle it with salt and pepper, and place it in the hot pan. Once it's in the pan, I turn it, I jiggle it, I keep it moving around until the green darkens and the stalks are lightly brown in a few spots. I remove it from the pan and serve. The whole thing just takes a very, very few minutes. Out of the pan, I squeeze a little lemon on it and enjoy it. It's tender. In fact, if you think back to the flavors that asparagus favors, some quick finishes to keep in mind are once it comes out of the pan, you can drizzle with extra virgin olive oil, butter, flavored oil, lemon juice, vinaigrette, hollandaise sauce. You can even grate a little hard-boiled egg on it or some Parmesan cheese. If you want to roast the asparagus, we've included a link to a recipe. But basically, preheat the oven, hot, 425 Fahrenheit, snap off the ends of the asparagus, and place the tender stalks on a foil-lined baking sheet. You can spray them with a little olive oil or cooking oil. Sprinkle them with salt and pepper, some minced garlic, and some grated Parmesan. I use my hands to rub that mix onto the vegetables so that they're evenly coated. And then I roast them for about 8 minutes, depending on the thickness. Again, out of the oven and serve them immediately. Another good way to oven prep your asparagus is, again, hot oven, 425 convection or 450 bake. Snap off the wooded ends, get them in a rimmed baking sheet, sprinkle with olive oil and a little salt, and then pour half a cup or so of chicken stock or the vegetarian version of that over the asparagus. Sprinkle on some crumbled feta and toss some halved cherry tomatoes in with the asparagus and pop that in the oven for 5 to 8 minutes until the asparagus is tender and the cheese is just starting to soften and melt. A nice quick salad starts with cutting the asparagus into bite-sized pieces and blanching in salted water. Do it for a minute or two and then transfer the pieces to an ice bath. You always want to do that to stop the cooking from your veggies. Transfer them to an ice bath. While it's cooking or cooling, whisk together some oils and vinegars and a little soy sauce. Toss the cooled asparagus in the vinaigrette and sprinkle with sesame seeds just before service. Or if you prefer, pass around a bowl of sesame seeds and let people sprinkle at the table. Any of the preparations that we talk about are relatively simple. This is a delicious, very, very seasonal vegetable in our area. And to savor it plainly with the flavors that merely enhance it are the best way to do it justice. I mentioned earlier that asparagus loves eggs and cheese. When I think about that combination, I think most frequently about putting together a quiche or a frittata. But let's talk quiche. We usually make our quiche without a crust, but certainly it's easy to make a crust for a quiche. You can either buy one in the refrigerator case at the store or make a simple pastry crust. Without a crust, we typically like to serve it with a nice piece of toasted sourdough bread. But to get started, preheat your oven to 400 degrees Fahrenheit and spray a pie plate or a quiche pan with cooking spray. Snap the woody ends off your asparagus and cut into 1-inch or thumb-sized pieces. Cuts on the angle are very attractive. Also chop a tablespoon or more of dill. Spray a large frying pan with pan spray or melt a little butter, a teaspoon or two. When the pan and butter slash oil are hot, add the asparagus and sauté for 2 or 3 minutes. You're not cooking it through. You're merely getting it started to finish cooking in the oven. Add the dill and sauté another minute or so until the herbs are wilted. Take the pan off the heat. In a separate large bowl, whisk together half a dozen eggs, a half a cup of dairy. whatever you have on hand is fine. If you use whole milk, 2% skim, it'll work. The higher the dairy fat content, the creamier the outcome will be. But use what you have on hand and use what your family likes to eat. So you've whisked in the dairy. Add a good pinch of salt, a couple of teaspoons of mustard, and whisk until those items are thoroughly combined. Then fold in the asparagus, a cup of your grated cheese of choice, and pour the mixture into your pan. Bake for 20 minutes-ish. The quiche should be set at that point. A butter knife, insert it in the center. Make them out shiny wet, but it shouldn't be dripping liquid. It's also fine to pop it back in for a few minutes to brown the surface, because brown food tastes good. This is a great brunch dish. I like to have it ready, sitting on a baking sheet, oven preheated, when my guests arrive. I can greet them, pop the quiche into the oven, pour drinks, get everybody in the kitchen to help assemble a salad, and by the time the quiche is ready, the salad will be done and the conversation's already well underway. You can make a quiche like this more substantial, actually into a meal, by adding diced smoked salmon or lightly sautéed shrimp or maybe some thinly sliced and sautéed morel mushrooms. Add them to the egg and dairy when you add the asparagus. If I added smoked salmon or shrimp, I'd probably stick with dill as my herb. If I add morels, I think I'd swap out the dill for thyme and its woodier flavor profile to tie the asparagus to the mushrooms. I've included a link to basic crustless quiche in the show notes, but play around, make it your own. I like to make a quiche like this and serve it warm for dinner. Leftovers are good for breakfast and great for a lunchbox lunch. Remember, the season for asparagus is short, very short, so I've included some links to freezing, canning, and pickling the asparagus to help you extend the season. For more on food preservation, listen to episode 6 and check out the CCE food preservation page. For other recipes, please go to the nutrition page on our Cornell website. Enjoy! That's it for this edition of From Patch to Plate. I'm Annie Skibinski.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and Philip Grant up in Rensselaer County and I are bringing you the WGXC Congressional Report, full of stories about what the candidates and representatives from the New York 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional districts have been up to this past week. Go to WGXC.org in the WGXC newsroom for complete coverage of your congressional representative.
The Troy Record reports that Representative Paul Tonko is crowing about the $936,414 the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Center for Substance Abuse Treatment has awarded the University at Albany for screening, brief intervention, and referral to treatment to prevent and address gambling among college students. Tonko, a Democrat representing Albany County and the 20th Congressional District, has taken up gambling as his own cause lately. Tonko is trying to ban online and television advertising of sports gambling, but his H.R. 967 bill has no co-sponsors. But he is happy that UAlbany is getting more than $4.8 million over the next 5 years to support that research. Tonko said, and I quote, "This funding will help ensure that young adults who are struggling with these issues have access to the timely and responsive support that they need to lead healthy and fulfilling lives," end quote. Tonko serves as co-chair of the Addiction Treatment and Recovery Caucus, a bipartisan group of legislators committed to advancing solutions to the country's multifaceted addiction crisis. Read more about this story in the Troy Record. Paul Kirby reports in the Daily Freeman that a report released this week by the Dutchess County Comptroller's Office said that a government lease of a luxury vehicle by former Republican Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro gave the, and I quote, "appearance of circumventing normal legislative approval as required by purchase and public transparency," end quote. Dutchess County Comptroller Robin Lois, a Democrat, wrote the report and focused on an inventory of county vehicles between 2018 and 2023. The summary in the report said, and I quote,
The report also addresses the 2021 lease of a $75,876 Chevy Tahoe by the county executive and identifies the execution of said lease after a 2020 purchase denial as giving the appearance of circumventing normal legislative approval as required by a purchase and public transparency. Leasing decisions should be held to the same standards as any purchase in the procurement policy by assuring the prudent and economical use of public monies in the best interest of taxpayers of Dutchess County, and to guard against extravagance. It is evident that the lease in question was not held to the standard expected of all departments. End quote. Molinaro did not comment on the report, but his advisor, Dave Cottolfamo, did, avoiding mentioning any specifics in the report, saying, and I quote, "Mark Molinaro's fiscal stewardship as county executive is indisputable. He cut taxes, improved the county's bond rating, and left his successor with significant reserves. This audit has been extensively reported on and thoroughly explained well before its release," end quote. The report showed how previously county executive vehicles were purchased through bonding and budget requests and go through the legislature for approval, while Molinaro circumvented that process. Democrat Josh Reiling, who lost to Molinaro in 2022 and has announced another campaign for the 19th Congressional District in 2024, said, and I quote, "It's ironic that Mark Molinaro is lecturing voters about reckless spending, even as an independent audit concludes that he wasted taxpayers' hard-earned money on a luxury vehicle for himself," end quote. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Tyler A. McNeil reports for the Daily Gazette that Republican Liz Joy will not run for a third term against Democrat Paul Tonko for the 20th Congressional District. Joy is a right-wing Republican who lost in 2020 and 2022 to Tonko by a wide margin in the Capital Region District. Joy attended Trump's rally near the Capitol on January 6, 2021, though did not enter the House of Representatives during the attempted coup. Now Joy said on social media that she plans on turning her attention to advocate for state-level, and I quote, "election integrity," end quote, saying, and I quote, "Together we were able to bring serious national attention to the New York Capital Region 20th Congressional District, something that had never been done before. It is a direct result of citizen grassroots support, our strong common sense message, and daily interacting with the people that live here and work here," end quote. Albany County Republican Chair Randy Bashwinger said he was surprised that Joy won't run again, saying, and I quote, "I'm sure we'll find somebody. It's going to be tough to find anybody as strong as she was," end quote. Joy lost to Tonko by about a 55-45% margin in 2022. Even though she was beaten by about 30,000 votes, Joy's attorney requested an audit of the election, which the state denied. Joy claims the voter rolls have never been, and I quote, "formally audited," end quote. But New York State Board of Elections spokesperson Jennifer Wilson said in an email that Joy is, and I quote, "factually incorrect," end quote, on the auditing process. Republican Elise Stefanik, who represents the 21st District, called Joy a, and I quote, "dear friend," end quote, and I quote, "inspiring patriot," end quote, and said, and I quote, "I look forward to continuing to work with Liz Joy as she begins her next chapter to restore election integrity and to secure our elections in New York," end quote. Read more about this story in the Daily Gazette. Mid-Hudson News reports that seven men have come forth to say they were paid to act as homeless veterans displaced from upstate hotels by incoming immigrants. Men were staying at a homeless shelter in Poughkeepsie and said they were among 15 men recruited for the scam by the nonprofit Yit Foundation. They were told to pretend they were veterans that had been kicked out of the Crossroads Hotel in the town of Newburgh last week before the arrival of actual migrants bused there from New York City. Assemblyperson Brian Mahar now says he was duped by Yit Foundation's director, Sharon Tony Finch, who appears to have fabricated the entire story. Mayor said on May 19th, and I quote, "When Sharon and several veterans explained to me their situation, I believed them at their word. I had absolutely no knowledge of any wrongdoing and believed that their stories were real until a phone conversation with Sharon yesterday afternoon when she explained to me that this did not happen the way she purported it to, end quote. The men said they were paid $200 and given food and alcohol to scam the public into believing that homeless veterans were being kicked out of shelters to make room for migrants. One of the homeless men said about Sharon Tony Finch, and I quote, "She told us to act like we were the veterans that had been displaced. She told us that if asked, we were supposed to say we had been kicked out and Sharon found us rooms in Fishkill," end quote. The man also said that anyone in the group who was unwilling to answer was told to respond with, and I quote, "I'm too traumatized to talk about it," end quote. The false story that migrants were displacing homeless veterans was repeated widely, both locally and nationally.
Local Representative Mark Molinaro was one of many politicians that amplified the false story. Molinaro quoted a New York Post story about the false story on May 12th, writing, quote, "This is absolutely inexcusable and should not be happening in America. This is the result of incompetence and lack of compassion. This won't be tolerated," unquote. Molinaro, a Republican, then commented after the hoax was made public, saying, quote, "The fabrication is so disheartening and wrong, it undermines the work of helping our veterans and makes more difficult our efforts to stop New York City from illegally moving migrants to upstate New York communities without resources or their approval. This must stop," unquote. Molinaro did not admit his own culpability in amplifying the false story.
Read the full story at Mid-Hudson News.
The Daily Freeman tracks the votes last week of Democrat Pat Ryan and Republican Mark Molinaro in the 18th and 19th congressional districts. The House on May 17th voted 221 to 204 to avoid a direct vote on expelling Representative George Santos from Congress. The freshman lawmaker from Long Island is under federal indictment on 13 charges of wire fraud, money laundering, theft of public money, and making false statements to Congress. Local Republicans Mark Molinaro and Elise Stefanik voted to adopt a Republican motion to refer a Democratic expulsion measure, House Resolution 114, to the Ethics Committee. The Ethics Committee is already looking into misconduct by Santos before and after his election to the House. So Republicans voted to avoid a vote on expulsion. Local Democrats Pat Ryan and Paul Tonko voted against the measure or in favor of holding an expulsion vote on Santos. Also on May 17th, the House voted 232 to 198 to pass H.R. 3091 that would allow federal law enforcement officers to buy firearms, including handguns and AR-15-style assault rifles that federal agencies have retired from their arsenals. The police officers would be allowed as citizens to purchase retired firearms at fair market value for lawful civilian purposes. Currently, the Secret Service and Customs and Borders Protection must destroy or transfer to another agency weapons they retire from use. Locally, again, the score was partisan, with Republicans Molinaro and Stefanik voting for the measure and Democrats Ryan and Tonko voting against. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
This has been the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional seats in New York. Go to WGXC.org for more information.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
This is Bria Barthel for Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Frequent listeners will know that I have spoken about RISE, the Refugee and Immigrant Support Services of EMEAS, in past sessions, and I am back once again with Daniel Butterworth, RISE Executive Director, to talk about some topics in the news. Daniel, welcome back to Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Good to see you again, Bria.
Anybody who's been watching the news knows that there's a quote-unquote surge of asylum seekers coming to our southern border, getting sent to New York City, getting distributed. Can you tell us something about what's going on regarding this in the Capital District?
A lot of what I know and other service providers know is also what we've been hearing in the media and seeing in the newspaper as well. The situation is continuing to develop and developing rapidly. And we do anticipate that we will be seeing a number of folks coming from New York City who arrived there from the southern border. But we know that there are a number of people who have arrived in the last few months who have been seeking services, even though we haven't had much communication from downstate government agencies or service providers about who is arriving, one of the organizations that has borne the brunt of a lot of the service needs of this population is Capital District Latinos, based in downtown Albany. And they have been providing food and emergency assistance to the folks who we have seen already in the Capital Region. Even at RISE, we've seen a number of those folks come to us for case management and English classes. But as far as the situation at present and how it will be going forward, we are working with a number of other service providers, city, county, and state representatives to figure out how to develop a local response that is coordinated and sustainable so that we can serve folks as best we can here in the Capital Region and make sure that we are welcoming and living up to our name as a place of sanctuary.
Now, you mentioned case management and language classes. Tell me something about the complexity of resettling.
So RISE is usually the second agency to see newcomers when they arrive, if they're arriving through the refugee resettlement process. The first agency is usually the U.S. Committee for Refugees and Immigrants, or USCRI, based also in downtown Albany. And their efforts are to find permanent housing, furnish that housing, provide transportation, help people get their work authorization, medical appointments, enroll kids in school, all of those pieces that one would need to get settled in a new place. That's traditionally been their role in the process here in the Capital Region. And then at a certain point, once those items are established, they partner with RISE to help provide additional support and English language instruction. For this particular migrant population that we're seeing at the moment, a lot of those same steps, even though it's not refugee resettlement, a lot of those same steps are required. Finding permanent housing, furnishing it, providing food, transportation, and medical access, education access, and the like.
So you mentioned that it's different than for the refugees you've been working with. So these are asylum seekers versus refugees. How does that make a difference in short-term, long-term?
Refugees come to the U.S. having been in the UN's refugee resettlement program for a number of years. They've applied for refugee status in or near their home country, have gone through many, many steps of vetting, background checks, and documenting their concerns about their safety in their home country. And as they go through all of those steps, it can take up to 7 or 10 years sometimes before they are placed in a new home country. So for those folks, it is a very lengthy process and a very circuitous, kind of long and winding road to get to their new home. For asylum seekers, they are folks who apply for asylum once they have crossed the border into the country where they are seeking asylum. And often this is because the conflicts or violence or persecution that they are fleeing from is not necessarily recognized by the UN or other international actors as an active conflict zone or one that requires involvement of the refugee resettlement mechanisms. So for a lot of the folks that we're seeing from Central and South America, they don't have the same access to international supports that folks in the refugee resettlement process do. And so they arrive at the southern border seeking asylum, which is legal. It is absolutely legal under U.S. and international law to be able to seek asylum in a country of safety. The process of granting asylum is a long and difficult one as well, and can take many years. The issue that we're seeing right now is because of the backlog of folks who have collected at the southern border over the last few years, who were denied entry because of Title 42, this COVID era restriction on border crossings. Now that that's lifted, we're seeing folks start to cross the border, claim asylum, and begin that process. So this is really a backlog of several years worth of people trying to seek asylum and get to a place of safety. The films and stories I have heard from the southern border, conditions there are dire for a lot of the individuals and families who have ended up there. So the response at the federal level has not kept pace with the human needs that we are seeing there. And now that Title 42 has lifted and that infrastructure to help these folks has not been implemented, it is now falling to states and localities to address those needs. And that's what we're seeing in New York City at the moment. As we work with our local partners, we're still trying to figure out what we can do to best serve people and hope that we can have a response that is compassionate and helps people during this period while they are waiting for asylum to be granted.
For RISE, one of the things I love about coming here is hearing all the different languages. And it's mostly people from Asia and Africa with a wide variety of language. But for people coming from the South, they're primarily Spanish speakers. So it seems like RISE may be needing some new help to meet that demand.
Yes. We've seen a marked increase in the number of Spanish speakers. So we are hiring a couple of Spanish-speaking case managers and front office assistants to help with translation needs. And that area of our programming will likely continue to grow. That being said, the populations who we have seen over the last few years are still here, are still seeking services. So having a broad range of languages amongst our staff is a priority for us. At the moment, I think we have about 12 languages or so on staff here at RISE, and a list of volunteer interpreters as long as you're on. But the number of Spanish speakers that we're seeing is definitely increasing as this crisis continues, and we try to provide services to those that are arriving here.
Besides getting Spanish speakers, bilingual speakers, what other volunteer opportunities or needs do you have?
One of our main programs is our adult English language classes. We currently have a wait list of English language learners who are looking for one-on-one tutors. Our after-school program is also expanding. We're seeing more Spanish-speaking kids in that program as well. Volunteers in the summer are necessary for reading assistance, activities, enrichment activities, and also sometimes help with our meal program.
So is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know?
Yes, of course. June 20th is World Refugee Day. This year, RISE is hosting an event at the Opelka Gallery on New Scotland Avenue. We are going to be screening a film called Utica, The Last Refuge. You can find details on our website, which is www.rise-albany.org. We are hoping for a great turnout. A lot of our community partners, other service agencies, will be in attendance as well, talking about their work. And the great thing about this film is that it shows not only an individual family's experience going through the refugee resettlement process, it also shows the economic and social impact that refugees have on their new home communities. And it's a really heartwarming story. It's an important film, an impactful film, and we hope you can join us.
Thanks a lot. And again, that was Daniel Butterworth, the Executive Director of Refugee and Immigrant Support Services of EMEAS, RISSE, in Albany. Daniel, great talking with you as always.
Thank you so much, Bria. Good to see you.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
If you would like to be on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM, now's your chance. Want to fulfill a long-time or newly emerging desire to be on the radio? Want to become part of the community conversations on Wavefarm's WGXC 90.7 FM, a radio for open ears? You have an idea for a short recurring segment? Tune into a Zoom meeting May 30th at 6 p.m. online. Contact content at WGXC.org to register and with any questions. But we would love as many voices as possible to be on the radio at WGXC, and this is your chance.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Mid-Hudson News reports that seven men have come forth to say they were paid to act as homeless veterans displaced from upstate hotels by incoming immigrants. Men were staying at a homeless shelter in Poughkeepsie and said they were among 15 men recruited for the scam by the nonprofit Yit Foundation. They were told to pretend they were veterans that had been kicked out of the Crossroads Hotel in the town of Newburgh last week before the arrival of actual migrants bused there from New York City. Assemblyperson Brian Mahar now says he was duped by Yit Foundation's director, Sharon Tony Finch, who appears to have fabricated the entire story. Mayor said on May 19th, and I quote, "When Sharon and several veterans explained to me their situation, I believed them at their word. I had absolutely no knowledge of any wrongdoing and believed that their stories were real until a phone conversation with Sharon yesterday afternoon when she explained to me that this did not happen the way she purported it to," end quote. The men said they were paid $200 and given food and alcohol to scam the public into believing that homeless veterans were being kicked out of shelters to make room for migrants. One of the homeless men said about Sharon Tony Finch, and I quote, "She told us to act like we were the veterans that had been displaced. She told us that if asked, we were supposed to say we had been kicked out and Sharon found us rooms in Fishkill," end quote. The man also said that anyone in the group who was unwilling to answer was told to respond with, and I quote, "I'm too traumatized to talk about it," end quote. The false story that migrants were displacing homeless veterans was repeated widely, both locally and nationally. Read the full story at Mid-Hudson News. Nick Reisman reports in New York State of Politics that during the COVID-19 pandemic, New York State officials made it easier for people to receive an absentee ballot, and advocates for open government would like that to continue. Blair Horner of the New York Public Interest Research Group said, and I quote, "Lawmakers would have to act on legislation to extend that this year. They haven't done it yet, and the primary election is merely 6 weeks away," end quote. Primary voting this year takes place June 17th through June 27th. Common Causes Susan Lerner agrees it should be easy for a voter to receive an absentee ballot because they do not want to be in a small room with so many other people for health reasons. And I quote, "This isn't about some special favor. This is a reasonable definition in our unfortunately highly contagious world that would be relevant, for instance, if you're a cancer patient under chemotherapy. It would be relevant if you're immune compromised. It would be relevant if you're an older person at risk of COVID," end quote. Republicans such as State Senator Mark Walczak are opposed, saying, and I quote, "We should be doing things to restore faith in the electoral process and get people out on Election Day," end quote. But there is no longer one single Election Day, but many days when voters may cast a ballot at the polls. Locally, Republicans in Rensselaer County have been charged with fraud about absentee ballots, but otherwise there have been no problems with absentee voting lately. Read more about this story in New York State of Politics. Scott Stafford reports for the Berkshire Eagle that locally allergy expert Dr. Jasdeep S. Bodwal says that, and I quote, "This spring has been particularly bad," end quote, for allergies. The specialist at Berkshire Allergy Care on South Street in Pittsfield said, and I quote, "And climate change is not helping.